Chapter 5. The Lord's Holy Supper. In the previous chapter, we stated that the mysteries concerning the immovable kingdom exist only insofar as dialectical man wraps himself in countless veils according to his type and nature. As soon as the veils disappear through the process of self-mortification, the divine mysteries appear clear and bright as day. The pupil goes from glory to glory and from power to power in the radiant light of the eternal reality. Correctly formulated, therefore, the so-called mysteries are conditions of our own obscured realities. We further establish that the influence of the threefold radiation of the Gnosis, with which the universal brotherhood influences the world and humanity in a continuous breaking up, must serve to keep fallen humanity and the vibration field in which it lives in motion, and prevent the retarding of vibration so that the life expressed in fallen humanity does not run aground and totally petrify. The breaking up influence of the threefold divine radiation, God's justice, has therefore to be seen as evidence of intense loving mercy towards fallen humanity. You will understand, however, that the pupil of the school of the Rosicross cannot stop at that. It will be of no use to you if you establish that dialectics is essentially caused by the love activity of the Gnosis if you do not move on. It is of no lasting use to you if you are able to reason scientifically that in and through the alternation of good and evil you are protected from ultimate petrifaction, and that you only have to be careful not to be found cold nor hot, as the sacred language expresses it. In other words, that you do not sink into bourgeois apathy, as to good as well as to bad, so that not a single functioning dynamic element can be recognized in you anymore. Such a state signifies absolute petrifaction. When a person has become like that, the last remnant of original life, held in their system as an atom, is taken out of the system because no further beneficial use can be made of it and no progression can be realized. Such a soulless creature, though so-called living, bound to the wheel and perhaps still facing countless incarnations for itself, is then, so to speak, cast into the outermost darkness. Indeed, such a person is completely cut off from the eternal spiritual reality of the divine light. May it not happen that you only understand this and nothing more, for pupilship of the school gains meaning and value only when one engages in dispelling the darkness in one's own system, so that the threefold radiation activity of the Gnosis can bring about something wholly other than just breaking up and keeping in motion. Your attitude must be, how can the eternal reality of God arise in my microcosm as a new sun? How can I see this dawn on the horizons of my life? When your problems arise from this, when these questions speak from within you, when every fiber of your existence bears witness to these questions, then your force field will already sparkle and vibrate with youthful vitality. However, as long as we still place the center of our problems in dialectics, bowed down because of our fears, worries and misfortunes concerning this life, as long as our blood still groans from the desire for the things of this world, there is essentially no question of pupilship of the school. You must grasp this to understand what the school has to say to you, because all too often it turns out that one has ears that do not hear and eyes that do not see when it concerns God's radiant clarity. Is it not often so that the Lord of all life resounds as if with trumpet blasts, yet is unable to reach you?
What is the cause? Your entire auric sphere is like a mantle, as thick as a monk's habit, concealing you from the light, sensorially impeding you.
Perhaps you have already met the figures of the twilight zone in your dream life, a greater or lesser stooping figure with a heavy robe gathered tightly with both hands about the body and face. An eye glances furtively from a wrinkled socket, an eye filled with a deadly fear, an incessantly searching gaze, an eye in which one can read all the tensions and ravages of eye centrality. This figure was you yourself. It was your reflection, such as it lives with many others in your auric sphere.
In dreams, our whole pantheon accompanies us. During sleep, our entire being spreads like a sample swatch. We live with sham beings and sham circumstances. The actual state of our own history with which we live and which we are confronts us. We thus dream our dreams, and upon awakening, all these realities and unrealities combine again in our consciousness. The consciousness is there all the time in our blood, in our heart, which sighing goes on pumping in this wretched life until the end, and in our brain, which thinks away, and we look at each other through a respiration field, an aura coloured and intoxicated by our phantoms.
We must see through this if we want to be a pupil of the school of the Rosy Cross, and we must realise that we shall have to tear all these dark mysteries from our life if we desire to find God. We must understand that an immediate action, a positive activity, is required of us.
Realize then that we have created around ourselves a world of phantoms. They arise from and through a life that is lost and lives in eye centrality. There are phantoms and ideas that set our whole attention on our daily bread. There are those that direct our attention on the family and many other such bindings, and those that nail us down to the delusion of our political status and leaning. Every second our attention is diverted and directed onto something on the horizontal plane, because all these phantoms in your aura are bound up with a circulatory process, two of these being the blood and the nerve fluid.
Periodically, the same things and the same suction forces, the same misery and the same so-called joys return. Just as people ceaselessly change clothes and present themselves as one or another image in the changing colours of diverse outfits, so the pantheon decorates us repeatedly in another garment, another veil. Now you will have to understand that an action, a positive activity, is immediately required of you, not a veil that would represent pupilship of the Rosy Cross. You should not repeat the old Adamitic drama. The fallen human being stands naked before the threefold radiation activity of the Gnosis. When the Gnosis calls with absolute unveiling lucidity, "Adam, where are you?" Then one can do two things: covertly move away like a dog, clothed in a sham garment to conceal the shame of self-discovery, or stand as with outstretched arms with a "Lord, here I am."
It is not required that you behave like a pupil of the school, but that you actually are one. What then is required of you? We shall try to explain this to you.
To behave as a pupil of the school is in itself an old testamentary attitude of life. You then lock yourself within a certain law and order. This is allowed, that is not allowed. You then adhere to rules and regulations. Take note of the meaning of behavior. When you aim for attitude, behavior, or demeanor, you wear a cloak. Pupilship then has its basis in the cloak and not in your own being. The cloak is then the umpteenth obstacle between you and the Gnosis. In this way, the Gnosis remains a mystery to you. That is the danger of your potential connection with the school. There is too much asking, what should I do and what should I not do? What should be my exemplary behavior?
What then is required of you? This is again asking for a prescription by which you can live. You are asking for an instruction book showing all the values and
necessities of the new life. You should ask for or imitate nothing. You should be something. You should be a pupil of the school. For this, you must attack your attitude of life. Today, very seriously, revise your own attitude of life today. Nobody can say, this has nothing to do with me. You have to attack your shadows and their consequences immediately. The veils must fall away. the capacities of your sense organs will then instantly open to the voice of the Brotherhood, and immediately, spontaneously from within, we shall no longer see any problems in pupilship. We will all be wholly at one concerning our attitude of life and everything the school posits concerning pupils and pupilship. You must swing the axe into your own being, then the dawning light of eternal reality will color your field of life. And when this dawn is visible, you will know why Christian Rosycross was busy preparing the Lord's Holy Supper before approaching the alchemical wedding. When the pupil drives the axe into his, her own being by positive actions, when he, she does not shy away from the consequences, with the result that the new sun shines, then the new light is the proof of a wholly new Gnostic activity. We have said that the triple radiation of the Gnosis strikes all so that they can be broken up and kept in motion. Now the pupil starts to tear apart his, her own veils. That is, the pupil brings order, rest, equilibrium, and serenity into the auric system, and as soon as the sun shines and sweeps away the clouds, the Gnostic light can be perceived because of this astral cleansing. The pupil then experiences the same as the old pioneers in Atlantis. Formerly they lived in the fogland, in the dim Atlantean atmosphere, but to the extent that they changed their bodies and thereby moved into finer atmospheric regions, the moment neared when for the first time they could see the sun as the real queen of the dawn. The pupil experiences such a mighty event when for the first time, ripping apart the foggy atmosphere of his own aura by positive self-breaking activity, he experienced with the sense organs the rising dawn, as Jacob Boehmer calls it. Understand clearly, though, that this light is not at this stage a personal possession. The pupil experiences a new radiation power, but the light itself is not yet his possession. He, she sees the promised land as from a distance, but without having reached it. In the Bible, Paul designates this as the state of faith, the binding of faith, which can really move mountains, but is not yet perfect. Therefore, the pupil continues with the work on his, her own self. The axe strikes the root of the dialectical rank growth with no trace of self-pity. Notice this signature of the true pupil. One has great sympathy and an immeasurable patience with others, but concerning one's own self, one is ruthless and does not postpone or delay anything. In this way, with the all-essential work on the self, the pupil prepares the precious paschal lamb, that is, he or she makes their aural sphere suitable for the definitive inflow of light, for the absolute indwelling of the light. Therefore, the moment then finally comes that the aura so prepared is touched, and several of its organ structures are definitively colored by the light of the Gnosis, then the light of the Lord is born in the pupil. Now, what matters is whether the pupil in this phase is capable also of preparing an unleavened pure wafer, as the alchemical wedding puts it. For when the light has been born in the pupil, it cannot be reconciled in any way with the dialectical life and dialectical reality. That is why the disintegrating fire, which attacks the whole of humanity in its self-preservation, affects the pupil more intensely. The closer the light approaches, the more intense is the purification, the consuming and the scorching, but also the grace and the possibilities for development are infinitely greater. Indeed, the pupil advances in this light, is helped by it, and he, she does no more, for the light within is now active. The self-mortification proceeds with great speed, and the possibilities for transfiguration unfold themselves in all their splendor. Now it is only a question of whether the pupil, who now knows and desires these processes, also spontaneously and voluntarily goes into action with his or her whole being and lives accordingly. If one does not do this, it affects the process disharmoniously, makes it sour, as it were. At the same time, however, the pupil should be aware that one may not and cannot accelerate the intended process with one's dialectical impatience. This too would bring about a fermentation process. Yet if the pupil ascends harmoniously in the whole process, he or she prepares a pure, unleavened wafer with their precious paschal lamb, and so hastens to a new peak of development, the storm of the spirit.